Hello, 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 and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. You will see that our friend Lipton Matthews is in Malteser mode at the moment, and we can only see his head. Maybe we will see more of him as the show progresses. I don't know. And with me today, we also have our good friend, Mermis Najmi. So hello, multiracial group of friends. Hello, hello, hello. And welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We are, of course, online public house, which is on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, which discuss space science and research stuff going on in the news and whatever from a kind of a psychological and curmudgeonly and based perspective. So cheers, everybody. Cheers, Paul, or Lord Peter Wyfront, as he's now known. That's a good point.
Peter of Wyfront.
Of Wyfront. Lord Peter of Wyfront. You need to let that guy breathe. You need to let it breathe.
Do you know what's really annoying? There's a village in my neck of the woods that's spelt in Welsh, Y-F-R-O-N. It just misses the T.
Oh, that's a shame.
So it'd be Wyfront.
Wyfront. Idui. No, my from coffee. No, what's from? What's I'm from in Welsh? I can't remember.
I don't know. I only live
anyway,
in Wales.
You live in Wales. Yaki Da, cheers,
Kurgan,
Katie, Blue, Saludo, Proust, Prost, and Tervis Sexy, and Slanger, and Slangervar, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. I trust you've had a stimulating and interesting weekend, and you have done all kinds of stimulating and interesting stuff. And Skoll, if you're and Proust and Prost, and any word for cheers that any of our viewers have down the hatch, resident poet, cheers, resident poet. Oh, yes, resident, remember the poem. Cheers, resident poet. I'll write that down. Cheers, resident poet, and cheers, everybody else, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. Lipton, could you move up slightly because it's getting a bit silly now. I don't know how this is working, but normally you negative space. If you did art at school, then any good art teacher will tell you that you can't have too much negative space. Bit of negative space, like Momus has or Paul has, yes, but too much negative space. Too much negative space is no good. Now, I'll start off the ball rolling. Lipton, try not to say anything too racist, because I want to try and keep this up. I had to take it down last week, so don't say anything bad about black people like you did last week. Now, it seems to me that everyone's going on about Prince Andrew and how Prince Andrew was found squatting over, or whatever it was, on all fours over a young girl. And yes, that's true. But surely even more bizarre, or even more world-shaking, is Lord Peter of Wyfront and related revelations that basically we owe an apology to our schizophrenic, our schizoid rightoid friends, and that there is essentially a massive, massive interlocking network of interrelated people, all of whom are degenerate in various ways, and know a degenerate guy who is of the old tribe. And he's basically central to world events to the extent that when Peter Mandelson was in government, he was getting loads and loads of squids from him and saying, I can help you, you know, lobby on your behalf and make the world better for you because we're degenerate friends. I think this is Sabbatian Frankism. I mean, this is really is the world ruled by, you know, this is loopy and no one's commenting on it. And Lipton, without causing any trouble, I'll start with you. How did you react to this?
Well, I was following Peter from a different perspective. So I'm familiar with his career and track record of engaging in what some would consider to be quite shady deals. So I was following it from that perspective as somebody who should be working for the British people, but at the same time, he is also an associate with individuals who might not have the best interest of the British people at heart. Secondly, Jeffrey Epstein story is not a story that I've been following for a while, but recently it has become quite interesting because of certain revelations, which I cannot repeat on the show. So did you see that email with Jeffrey Epstein? It was about his friend called Gene and the Black Congressional Caucus in America.
No, I didn't. No. Maybe you can repeat it, but in a way that uses code.
Yes, so apparently...
The code is Canadian.
Yeah, Canadian, yes. So apparently, Jeffrey said the black guy, Gene, who works for him for several decades, told him that if he had been in the situation where he had to communicate with the black American politicians, he would have said The N-word. Well, the Gene guy used the N-word to describe the black politicians in America.
Okay, well, in the same way as that kind of Chris Rock guy does.
Yes, Gene, yes.
Black people, yeah, I see. And then the one I thought was interesting was that he said that I saw Madonna on the Jew Larry King show talking about Kabbalah, Hollywood's types, especially Gentiles, trying to get on the Jew identity bandwagon. This is the Jew way to make money and made a fortune in the past 10 years selling short shipping futures and let the goyim deal in the real world. I mean, so he has a racial hierarchy of which his ethnic group are at the top.
Yes,
I mean,
yes. That's clear. They use that word quite a bit.
He did. And he talked about how...
Ed, is there any racial group that puts themselves at the bottom of the hierarchy?
You white people.
Whites, surely.
Oops.
I mean, ask a silly question, Paul. Come on. I mean, white, Christian, upper middle class, educated...
Technically, men. Ed, I'm blue.
Are you?
Yes.
Well, like you're the same way that Prince Harry got blue because he's got cold in the...
No, he's a Ginga. I'm whiter than Nosferatu's bum. So I constitute blue.
Oh, I see. Like a blue steak. Yeah. But uncooked. It is Sabbatian Frankism. It is the idea that there was a book I got years ago called something like The Vice of Kings by someone called Jason Hawley. And he basically argued that an interconnected group of paedophiles rules the world. And he presented, frankly, not very good evidence for this. But now we have it clear. We have an actual convicted nonce who is the central node in a network of high-powered people who've all got to know each other through this nonce. And you've got people wanting to be in it, wanting to get to know him because he can introduce you to people. You know, he's the guy, this nonce that you go to if you want to get to know other high-powered people. I mean, it is the schizoid's wet dream. Momus, what were your thoughts?
I mean, it's just so weird. Like, it is a cabal of, like, you know, global degenerates. It doesn't matter, like, where they're from. Obviously, whoever has the more power is controlling it by their special interests and stuff, but it's everyone connected is a degenerate, like in there. It's so huge, you don't even know what to make of it at this time. Like, cause there's so much interconnectivity of these people and how they are in every government and how they are, like, influencing, you know, him, like, representing Rothschilds and, like, stuff like that. Like, there's so much in there. I'm not surprised that the Trump administration took this much time to release what they have released now and also redacted a lot of information, because there's so much in there that you can't make head or tails out of it right now. It's just... But it proves all the many of the conspiracy theories right, or maybe not the conspiracy theories itself, but the conspiracy instincts. Maybe that was right, that there was something. And I don't know how we get to the bottom of it. I don't know who catches whom, who makes whom accountable. Like, you know, how do we actually make things right over here? It's just
Lord Peter of Wyfron was very good at getting to the bottom of things.
Was he? He was, yes, good point, yes, good point, good point. He was, and that's another thing as well, like, about the level of degeneracy. Who would stand there in front of a random woman in their pants?
Yeah.
I don't know who would, Ed.
I don't know, I wouldn't. Like, normally, the only...
Who would
only
be caught in a private toilet cubicle in a Liverpool pub and was photographed by someone who now has compromat on them, Ed?
Yeah, well, that was still a black, wasn't it? But she was sent out as a high class whore, but I saw through her. But it's you wouldn't do that. So that shows you, that tells that itself, there's an insight into the level of intimacy involved here and the level of degeneracy involved here, that it's perfectly acceptable with some random girl for this guy. So and so for him to also, like, did he know he was being photographed? I mean, doesn't it occur to these people that the photographs might leak? Doesn't it occur to them that any of this stuff could leak? Obviously not.
But that's a really good thing, right? Because they're so blazing about it. Like, they don't care. They know they're that powerful.
Or except Momus, it was camera'd up, wasn't it? The whole environment, like Big Brother. Yeah. So it may not have been obvious he was being photographed.
But like sending emails, like, and like emails can be tracked and stuff. They knew that they'll be fine in a way, you know, because they will have ultimate control or whatever. Who's going to make them accountable? Maybe
what like I find them. Interesting, because I'm not one of these conspiracy theorists like Ed is, but it does interest me that given the, everything we already knew about Lord Peter of Wyfront, Starmer still appointed him as ambassador. So there are two options there. The Secret Services told him and Starmer still did it, or the Secret Services didn't know all about Mandelson, which means they're incompetent. So, and that begs the question, so if he made him ambassador knowing full well all of this stuff, just hoping it didn't get out, does that mean Lord Peter Wyfront had compromise on Starmer?
Yes.
Must do.
Because otherwise, who in their right mind would have appointed him unless it was leverage by Lord Peter of Wyfront?
Because he'd already been sacked, hadn't he? He'd already been sacked at the end of... Was it something under the Blair government?
He was sacked twice.
Yeah, yes. he was sacked. And then I think he was... Twice, yeah. And then I think he was sacked again. And it was during the second... The second
twice
round...
means once again, Ed.
Yes, I know. and in the thrice means once again. And then he was it was when he was in the second time, which is 09 under Brown, that he was lobbying basically on behalf of Jeffrey Epstein to reduce tax on bankers or financiers or whatever it was. So he's utterly corrupt, and Starmer knows that he's utterly corrupt. So,
yeah, I know. So why did he still do it? Which is an interesting question,
right? And yeah, and we know that there's these questions out there surrounding, you know, Starmer and Ukrainian rent boys.
That's defamatory. Stop it.
Well, it's not. They are definitely Ukrainian rent boys, and they definitely have done things to his old house and his car.
Yeah,
and one wonders why the former house of the prime minister and the former car or whatever it was of the Prime Minister would be attacked in this way.
The Labour Party official line is that it was a Groniad typo and they are Ukrainian tent boys. They are active in the camping community, so stop your terrible illusions, Ed.
They are lent boys.
I have a question. Jeffrey Epstein was a powerful man with sensitive information, yet he was imprisoned. This is a question that people are not asking. Why did he go to prison? Did he offend anybody who is quite rich and powerful? That's my argument. Jeffrey was only sentenced because he offended somebody. Who is the person?
I think so. The other thing as well is like Jeffrey Epstein died, right? But it's not as if they have disbanded. It's still going on, right? Like they were still pressuring on to each other. Mendelsohn is still going over there, whatever he has on Starmer, or whatever they have. So I think so it shows Epstein wasn't the main player anyways.
Exactly,
he
my
was
point.
Just a frontman, right? Like he was frontman. Even if he died, their cabal hasn't like disintegrated because he's dead.
Yeah, but don't you think everyone's getting excited about the notion of a cabal? Did anyone in their right mind ever think that real power in the world was always by democratically elected governments? You don't have to be a conspiracy theory to know that a lot of democracy is just window dressing for the real power structures. That's not conspiracy theory. That's common sense. It's obvious.
That's common sense, and that's basic sort of Machiavellian fox and lion. Moscow.
Well, just to give you one very quick example, Liz Truss might have been an idiot, but she was not allowed to do what she democratically wanted to do and lasted 40 days. If the money markets, for example, don't want you in power, you'll soon be removed. That's not conspiracy, that's factual.
No, that's factual. And also you get people that are popular with the voters and people like them and whatever, and so you put them up as leader, but they're not capable of actually doing the actual leadership behind the scenes stuff. And so you'll get these kinds of people that are in office and not in power, and that's quite common, that they delegate, like Hitler delegated everything to people that weren't quite as lazy as him, to the people that didn't get up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon after watching films all night and whatever, to actual people that got things done, like Borman. And those people were the people that were really, really in charge, you know. So,
and then there's also the inertial aspect of it. So the civil service is one part Machiavellian and 10 parts incompetent, lazy and inbred. So the civil service will stop you doing anything you want just through sheer incompetence or ideologically, you know, dogmatically driven drivel that they subscribe to, like DEI.
Yeah, they're the new Sir Humphreys, except Sir Humphrey was a conservative that wanted to keep the ship of state sailing and whatever, whereas these people want to completely sink the ship of state and subvert it because of their own insane woke ideas. So, they're not. We shouldn't be surprised that there's the power behind the throne, the real power behind the throne, not just the Quakers, which you will discover later this month when my book comes out, but also these kinds of people. And I presume that there is some sort of Epstein figure at the moment that has taken his place. Mm. And they've learnt their lesson. And now it's, be in touch completely by telephone, or even that's not infallible. But don't write everything down. They've learned their lesson.
But Ed, it's not that schematic. There are networks of powerful people. You don't have to have someone living under Mount Vesuvius stroking a white cat. This is just how things are. But I think people are getting overexcited because they happen to see behind the curtain for a little bit.
Yes, I like that comparison behind the curtain. The kayfabe in wrestling terms, in wrestling jargon, you know, kayfabe is that there's goodies and there's baddies, and there's the force of good and there's the force of bad, and they hate each other, and it goes on throughout, you know, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, and WrestleMania, and then it's a new season and it's a new series of antagonisms and so forth. But what this implies is that, you know, these are people who are Democrats and people that are Republicans. These are people that are conservative and people that are liberal. I mean, this is like Peter Mandelson, but then also Donald Trump. This is all kinds of people. And they're all, and Prince Andrew, and they're all in with this guy, this wealthy power broker who gets them sex, or whatever he gets them, with young desirable girls, including Russians. Who, although they're not going to be compromised, are they? No, we should just trust them. Yeah, there's Bill Gates, apparently he managed to have sex with a Russian prostitute and get an STD and then give it to his wife, and then he had to come up with a way of putting antibiotics or something in her coffee so she wouldn't know she had an STD, but she could take it. Like that, it's amazing.
How do you know that?
That's what I've read that somewhere.
In the email.
Yeah. He read that. He read that. He gets Viz delivered every month, and he read it in Viz.
It wasn't in Viz. No, but the Noam Chomsky thing, that was debunked, Lipton. So they had a point where they were saying that Noam Chomsky behind the scenes really believed in race science or whatever, and actually that's not true. He didn't say that. He just said that the guy just talked about race science, and he said, "Oh, thank you for inviting us for dinner. It was very, very nice." But I don't see how. And as for Prince Andrew, it's now so bad that I wonder how. What you were saying earlier,
it's formerly known as Prince.
Oh, sorry, yes, the Andrew Mountbatten Windsor.
He's now known as Signal. He's just a
but I can't understand this. It's this in terms of vetting. You're talking about I think it does come across more as incompetence. You'd think they would vet somebody like that's going to marry into the royal family. As I understand it, look, Fergie's father was like he failed his exams at Eton. He was so thick.
I think Prince Charles is supposed to be an intellectual. You know, giggle giggle, and he had the world's best education. And I think he got something like a C and a D at A level. Even you, Ed, did better than that at A level.
Yeah, 3 A's. Yeah, as we've discussed before. And I didn't go to a posh school.
Yeah, but you did them when A levels were given away with Rice Krispies packets.
I didn't go to a posh school.
Went to grammar school. So scrub your nan.
Grammar school's a posh school.
Grammar isn't.
Yeah, you would have had like intellectual capital from your peers.
I went with Scroats to a school in West Derby and had to share. I sat next to someone from Tochy.
I don't know what that means.
Ed. Let me, Ed, my turn to speak.
Yes,
Paul is really smart. Paul, no, seriously, Paul is a really high IQ.
And Ed can't recognize that. So what does that say about Ed?
Paul is really smart. No,
whenever I agree with Lipton.
No, Paul is so good at poking holes into serious arguments. It's unbelievable. He's really bright.
Let's try to find an email between Epstein and Paul then.
I was just about to say that the world, in truth, is really led by the jolly heretic.
That is, there is certainly some truth in that, but yes, I can't be that influential because I'm not, as far as I know, I'm not in the Epstein files, and unlike JF Gary Epi, who's been on this show a number of times, I've been on his show, you know, I've not been funded or whatever by Epstein.
Before I forget, you know, did you remember that comment Lord Peter Whitefront made quite a while ago about we are incredibly relaxed about the filthy rich?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think there's a metaphorical comparison with Labour being incredibly relaxed about the filthy perverts with the grooming gangs and so on?
Mm.
And I just wish, you know, Mandelson's had his comeuppance. I just wish all those Labour apparatchiks who are still covering it all up eventually get their comeuppance in a similar way.
Yes, I hope they all get revealed for photographs of them in their wife fronts. That'll show them the collaborators. It's just after this, I just wonder how any sensible person can trust anybody in this elite class ever again. Fortunately, we always do because we almost have no choice but to do so because we're pack animals.
I think we've reached a tipping point. So think of what's his name. The fact that Starmer has a knighthood. I think that the elites have overreached themselves at certain points and no one can take the honours system seriously when you have to say Sir, Keir, Nan, you know, Granny Harmer. It's ridiculous.
Mm. No, and that woman that reported the Queen's lady-in-waiting for racism. Or
yes,
something.
Yes, because she said, where are you from? The pretend Fulani lady.
Yeah, well, she said, where are you from? She was recently given some kind of honour as well. And so the people that would have got honours in Victorian times or whatever, those people that do those same things, important things, they don't really get honours. And the people that just, it's nonsense and woke stuff and whatever, they get honours. So the honour system is meaningless at this point. The system of patronage, you don't take it seriously. So if someone's a lord, that used to mean something when there weren't many lords and when, you know, they'd done something significant. It used to be that to get a peerage, you had to be kind of either a prime minister or a high-up cabinet minister at the very least. But now they just give every ex-cabinet minister and quite a load of other pointless people.
It used to be the case, for example, you had to know something about football or have been an ex-player to be a football commentator. Now you just have to be female.
Yeah, I was going to say that, but thank you for saying it for me.
Well, no, I feel really, I am not as misogynistic as Ed at all. I'm actually a massive women's rights person, but it is just qualitatively different. You have female commentators in cricket, for example, who've never, ever faced 100-mile ball whizzing past their face. So who the hell are they to comment as if they know what's going on? Mm-hmm. And female football is completely different sport to male football. Mm-hmm. So, but they're given this so-called expertise they just don't have.
It's
disgraceful.
It's like people who run finance channels on YouTube, but they have never managed a business and they didn't study finance in school, but people listen to them.
Yes, like that. But they might know a bit about it though. They might have something.
They might have studied it and like stuff like that. Might be investing and stuff. And I don't know. I think that, like people keep on believing in these elites and stuff. I think so because of what I was saying before as well. Like it's so big that normal people cannot get their heads around it. So they will just ignore all of it that it has happened. They will not peer through the curtain, right? They were like, okay, it's not for me. and they will keep on believing whatever lies are being told to them, because it's just so much easier. They can just go on, live their lives, you know, go to their jobs and whatever they're doing. We can't, you know, change anything anyway. So why even try? I think that's why people keep on believing.
That's true of the grooming gangs, Momus, and the Islamic growth in the country and stuff like that. They just can't believe it, so they don't want to talk about it.
I think so. A lot of people, like recently, was it Sunday? I went on Talk TV. They asked me to come on to talk about something, and then they obviously changed the subject on me when I was actually there. And this guy, he was talking about how Islam and Islamism is different, right? Like, oh, you can't mean like all Muslims are bad, or all Muslims believe in blah, 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 stuff like that. And, you know, and he then asked, like, he challenged me, like, oh, do you think you know more than people who say that they are Muslim? And I told him, like, well, I know more than you. So, you know, you are talking about Islam and how Islam is different from Islamism, but you don't know anything about Islam. But you are parroting these viewpoints, right? And what I think a lot of people, I've seen them, the reason why I'm telling you is because a lot of people say that, oh, but this is not Islam. This is radical Islam. It's different from Islam. Because I think so, it's a comfort thing for them. So they don't have to actually face the truth. And a lot of people build these lies and believe in these lies, like Islam is a religion of peace. Oh, those grooming gangs, yeah, it was just like in little pockets and stuff like that. Or, oh, those girls were deserving of it because they were promiscuous or stuff like that. You know, so they will bring up these lies sort of in their own head to bring comfort to themselves, so they don't have to face the actual dark reality of human nature at times, that people can actually be bad, people can actually do bad things. There could be a network of evil people working together, not necessarily evil as well, just bad faith actors who have their own interests at heart. And, you know, they don't believe in anything higher or whatever it might be. I think so. It's a comfort thing for people. They can just ignore it. Most people don't even know what's going on in the news. Most people won't even know about these Epstein files at all, you know, because majority of the people are not on Twitter. They're not on social media. And they would be completely, if I go to work tomorrow, I can bet there won't be a single person who knows what's going on. Not a single person would be cued on to any of this.
Are they subscribers to this channel?
No. They're not even subscribers to my channel. So
you need to get subscribed to all our channels.
I want to keep my job, sir.
Okay. and that is, you know, that's a normie job, isn't it? You're not like the undercover spy in a grooming gang.
Interesting job,
but I said I need more money, so you know.
Interestingly, when I was in London a week ago, I attended an event at the Prosperity Institute, and the panelists, they destroyed the multiculturalism argument. There was a Labour peer on the panel, he's Jewish, and he basically said that we ought to retire multiculturalism because it is deterring social capital. And there was a Muslim woman on the panel, she's an attorney. Leila, she's the UK Reforms. She wants to be the next mayor of London. And she bashed the grooming gang scandal and the elites. And she said the girls were raped because they were white. It was quite interesting that so many people, especially the members of the audience who are elite themselves, were not into the multiculturalism nonsense.
Well, it's basically interfering with growth, isn't it? With economic growth. How can it be? It's not improving economic growth. Surely, in order to have growth, isn't a part of it you have to have corporation?
Yes.
And to have to have trust. Social capital. Trust. Like everybody, yeah, but even if we just trust, like a basic thing. The reason why Jews and Quakers were so big in banking is because they were small little groups, tight knit little groups where you could trust each other. Every Quaker could trust every other Quaker to pay their debts. Mm. Every Jew could trust every other Jew. And they were funneled into it because they were discriminated against and weren't allowed to go into the professions. But so that's why Jews and Quakers control became big in banking, because there was high social trust, high social capital. So if you take that away, if nobody can trust anybody else, how can you take a loan out? How can you offer credit? How can you do anything if you can't trust anybody else? and then nothing works. So we need trust.
I think I profoundly misunderstood the way the UK works these days, because what tends to happen is I have 100%
trust. What's happening with your mic?
What's up with it?
I'm making a
crackly
noise.
From my
mic? Yeah.
It's like you're on some other planet.
Yeah.
Just time travel somewhere else.
Now he's turned off the mic. He can't hear you because you turned the mic off. You can't hear you.
Can you hear that?
Yeah, that's better.
Right. No, you fundamentally misunderstood how the UK economy works. It does work on a 100% trust basis. For example, I have 100% trust that every penny of the tax I don't pay anymore would go to welfare benefits and undeserving people. So there's a new system being built up that is inherently predictable, runs like clockwork, as long as nobody does an honest day's work.
Well, yes, I suppose so. But to raise the level and be serious, you do need.
I'm being partly serious.
You can trust things are messed up, whatever. I was in Saffron Walden. To have nice things, like everyone goes onto the Saffron Walden town green and plants their own daffodils at this time of year, and they spring up, you know, next month or whatever, April, and it looks nice, and everyone just invests, and everyone assumes nobody else will sponge off the system, and then you get nice daffodils. Even something as tiny as that relies on high social trust. So we can't have high social trust if we have completely separate split communities. If you have small numbers of foreigners, then they can integrate and whatever.
They will need to integrate if they're a small number.
I was amazed by, even when there weren't many of them, they would still refuse. Like, my daughter can't go swimming.
Yeah.
All the other daughters.
But this particular kind of immigrants, isn't it? Like, and people just don't want to say it. They're like, oh, no, it's not Islam, but it is in Islam. Right? They will always be separate because their ummah is separate. Their religion is separate. They can't eat in the same plates as the other people because you're impure. They can't drink in the same glasses. Like, everything for them has to be separate because for them you're impure, right? So they already are creating these barriers. And maybe some of them will be moderate in a way that they don't believe in it. But why are you sacrificing your whole culture and your whole society for some of them who don't really belong here anyway? So, you know, why are you accommodating your own decline? So this is what I really don't understand.
I never understood what was going on, like with girls. So when I was at my sixth or seventh birthday party, I invited various Muslim friends like Yusuf and Saad and Salman. And they came, but Sadia, who I fancied, did for some reason didn't come. I couldn't understand it. And I thinking about it now, it was probably because it was a boy's birthday party and her father said, no,
a boy's birthday party right now.
is haram.
I'm confused now because I think he was an eminently sensible man. I wouldn't send my daughter to Ed's house.
It's when I was 7 years old, Paul.
Bad example. Even if you do
it, I didn't have like a Jeffrey Epstein.
All right. Can I apologize, Ed? You were a physically weak pervert.
At seven, I was.
I'd need a bigger stick to beat you off.
if it was that old joke, if your dad was a butcher, would you eat his meat? But there's someone about to beat you off.
No.
I just caught a falling lamp with my foot because I'm like, I've got the reactions of a mongoose.
God.
Everything's okay, don't worry.
So I was concerned there was a ghost. It made Harry Hario 27270 jump.
Now is I've got my foot outstretched, but I don't know how to bend down and pick up the lamp, because if I move my foot, the lamp will fall.
Yeah. I admire the way that you've put effort into lighting and so forth. I didn't know you'd done that. I just thought you were in a well-lit room.
I'm a professional, Ed.
In the ceiling.
Not as professional as Lipton with his piano in the background. He's got an automatic sinkhole that he keeps disappearing into.
Lipton, later, after the intermission in the middle, could you go and play that piano? That'd be really, really cool to watch you go and play that grand piano that you seem to have over there. Just a little bit, just a little tune, you know, merrily we roll along or something like that. But no, I think this is true, Momus. It's such a ridiculous thing that we have done as a nation over the last 40 years, particularly, to allow the huge growth. Like, I've just done this documentary on Birmingham, and there's whole areas, Sparbrook, Spar Hill, whatever, and almost everybody is Muslim. And there's a few Sikhs, and they're not actually that. I mean, one thing that stuck out at me was that I went, you go to a Hindu temple, they're like, come in, come in. You go to a Gurdwara, come in, have some food. But if you go to a mosque, sometimes come in, but sometimes, well, what's your game? What do you want? Why? They're not friendly.
Yeah, because they're a close community. Like, they don't see you as. Anyone who is a non-Muslim doesn't really have human rights to them. This is why in the grooming gangs and stuff, they were able to do that. It wasn't just because they were white. Like, yeah, there is some like thing about they fancy white people more anyways. That's something else. But they do that in their own home countries to Hindus, to Christians, and, you know, their own ethnicity, right? So it's not just racially, it's actually religiously motivated that they are taught this from birth, that anyone who's non-Muslim basically is a non-human to them. They don't have the right unless they accept Allah. So that's how they treat it. And people cannot get their head around it because obviously in the West, especially in Britain and stuff, people don't have that mentality. People don't think like this anymore. So they just can't relate to that sort of mentality. So they just prefer not to accept it. They prefer, no matter how many times I will tell them, look, this is in the Quran, this is what's happened, this is what Muhammad has done, this is how they think, this is how they think behind the closed doors. You have no idea how a normal moderate, even a moderate Muslim is actually racist towards white people behind closed doors within Britain and stuff like that. They would just not believe it because it's too hard.
Why is that the case? Is it because British people are naive, or is it because they're just simply stupid? And I use a second adjective because I've read a number of books on this topic. There's this writer called Ephraim Karsh. He's an expert, not somewhat of an expert. He's an expert. He wrote a book, The Islamic Empires. We have tons and tons of data on Muslims and the correlation between the Muslim percentage of the population and the propensity for genocide. So what's the problem with the British people?
I don't think so. It's like that British people are stupid or any other Westerners are stupid and stuff. And it's not even like that they're too liberal or stuff, which is a problem. It's the same thing as like you cannot really understand the mind of a serial killer, right? So you cannot relate to that serial killer. So even if someone is telling you what the serial killer thinks and does, you just can't relate to it. You can't accept what Paul actually does in his spare time. Like, you know, because he...
Momus, that was a very... Him. That was a very ecumenical metaphor you chose to use. I won't get you in any trouble whatsoever.
We have an insight into the mind here on the Jolly Harris.
It is that serious, though, like, isn't it? Like, because it's such a, like, it's that sort of mentality that you can't relate to. It's not what normal human beings are supposed to be like. Over years, there hasn't been that much exposure of normal Westerners with Muslims as well, as in living together.
Something must have changed, because if you go back to the beginning of the Raj, then the East India Company, you had people like, there was this guy, Lieutenant Colonel Fitzpatrick, his name was, and at that time, the upper class of northern India was all Muslim, and he married the daughter of the Prime Minister of Hyderabad. He converted to Islam and he wore clothes and smoked a hookah. But a lot of these relationships that was in the Epstein files. A lot of these relationships that were with that have created Anglo-Indians, like that were between British men and Indian women, were Muslims. They were Muslim women. Because that was the sort of slightly higher class that we were more likely to interact with, whereas we saw the Hindus as heathens, the Hindus, they ate with their hands and believed in multiple gods and things like that. So something must have changed in 300, 400 years. Why? What do you think?
Well, that specific region, in other areas of the Islamic world, in the Arabs and stuff like that, till they got the oil and like became rich, they were way worse. I guess like over the years, they also assimilated within India, like the Mughals and stuff, like they assimilated with Hindus and stuff, and they sort of moderated the people. People were well off for a very long time. So when in Islamic societies, if you see when they're prosperous, they're very moderate. You know, they're not that religiously, you know, extremist. It's when the chips are down, and you can see that, like when Pakistan has gone down the route, especially Pakistan, when they become poorer and poorer, they are producing more and more extremist people from them. And also the kind of people that are coming over here in Britain are not the best people of Pakistan. They're not intellectually superior. They're really intellectually, you know, low. They don't have that many good skills. And they are sort of kind of people who won't even integrate into the Pakistani metropolitan cities, right? So it's hard to generalize, because those people that you're talking about would have been there, like, you know, upper echelon of people who are intermingling, who are like more anglicized, right? Hmm. They would be a bit different. They would be like the Leila Cunningham of this era, right? So yeah, you're marrying a Muslim, but are you really marrying a Muslim? That sort of a thing. They would have different attitudes to the people who are lower class, who really believe in their religion, like in extremist forms and stuff. So we are getting those sort of people more, I think. So that's why there's a problem.
Momus, is it true you used to work for the Islamabad Tourist Board?
Yes, exclusively.
Yeah,
Momus. Yeah, so Momus, engineers are smart people. It's a G-loaded subject. Interestingly, in Islamic movements, engineers are likely to occupy leadership roles when they are terrorists. Many Islamic leaders who are radical are also intelligent and upper class, and there isn't a link between terrorism and poverty. Many terrorists are not poor people. So no, why is there like, well, such of elite Muslims who are also radical?
I think so. Like, obviously, because it's control. You can control people more with religion, right? So obviously, the elites will use religious, you know, sentiments to like, control other people. That's why the elites use that. But I think so. There's also a misconception of like that engineers are intelligent people. It's like engineers who create things are intelligent people. Engineers who are doing degrees or whatever, knowing about physics and stuff, and just following like manuals and just working in factories or whatever like that, are they really that intelligent? Can we actually equate them? There's nothing. Pakistan is not innovating anything, right? It's not as if like their engineers are Elon Musk or stuff like that. They're just working their jobs. Like, so there's how much intelligent they actually are. You know,
Can I give an answer, Lipton? Like, surely the people that lead extremist movements, right, the people that are attracted to extremist movements are often not very intelligent, and the people that lead extremist movements, they're often, I would argue, like intelligent, like optimally a combination of intelligence and like certain dark triad traits, aren't they? So you know, if you think about the leaders of the far right or the leaders of the far left, they're obviously intelligent and they have dark triad traits. And they attract people that are both mentally ill and who want simple answers because they're not very bright. So I think it makes sense that the leaders of things like Al-Shabaab or Al-Qaeda, I think the current leader, or was it the last leader of Al-Qaeda? He was a medical doctor, for example.
Mm.
I don't think that's a contradiction. I think this is what you'd expect.
It was easier for him to chop people's hands off.
Exactly. Chop them.
He had, if he was an engineer, he had, or if he was a doctor, he knew how to do it from his medical stuff. And if he was an engineer, he had like the spatial intelligence to you know, get it in the right place rather than chop just the fingers off or the winkle. So this is, yeah, this is sure, this is it. Okay, we're about halfway through. So to those of you, hello, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We are an online public house. We meet on Monday at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, which discusses what's going on in the news from a sort of a based, interesting perspective. If you're new, would you please subscribe? Could you subscribe here on YouTube and subscribe on leave a comment and a like and a share and the bell and all that for the algorithm. And could you subscribe on my Substack? That's jollyheretic.com, where I put all the most base research I can't put on YouTube, where I put in-person interviews, vlogs, movies I make. I've just made one on Birmingham, by the way. And where, if you like what I do, you can support the cost of a pint of beer a month. Next to me, it's counterintuitive because I'm pointing the wrong way, we have Lord Peter of Wyfront. He is also known as Dr. Paul Taylor, and he has a very interesting channel called Readers of the Lost Art, where I'm supposed to go and talk about Genesis at some point, but I haven't done so yet. So do go and subscribe.
Could I do a quick plug, Ed? Two quick issues. One is I'm just about to reach 6,000 subscribers, if I can get a few more. And given the type of serious stuff I do, I'm quite happy with that. But secondly, I've started the world's slowest Proust book club. I've got a friend, Stuart, who's very funny, actually. So it's a light-hearted... Every couple of weeks, we look at Proust, and we've had 2 hour-and-a-half sessions, and we've got to page 12. So if you really want to live in the fast lane, join the Proust Book Club.
Okay, the Proust Book Club. So that's the problem with French people. Whenever they want to remember anything, they have to eat a Madeleine cake, and it makes them very, very fat. So that's why they have to smoke to keep the appetite down. So subscribe over there on Readers of the Lost Art. Then below, we have... Lipton Matthews, and he has a very interesting channel, and so it's just called Lipton Matthews, and he gets lots of interesting people that he can interview that I can't, because he has black privilege, so which is a concept that he coined, and I almost got into trouble. I did get into trouble for mentioning in a pub in Swindon once. The barmaid declared that what I said was offensive, as did a number of the strippers at the pub. So there we go. So subscribe to Lipton Matthews, and then next to me and down sort of the diagonal. Yeah, there we go. We have Momus Najmi, and he has a very interesting channel called World of Momus. So go and subscribe there. He hasn't had me on yet. I don't know why.
I haven't actually. Oh, we should do something.
Do something on Islam.
I just realized.
I want to talk about the abolitionist movement.
Do you? I seem to recall that over the years I've known you, Lipton, you're quite interested in that. And we'll do that when I've finished.
Yes.
which you've interrupted again. Where was I? We have a resident poet here at the Jolly Heretic Public House, Mr. Quinn, and he has a very interesting poem which I'm clicking on now on my WhatsApp. There we go. Once more it's goodbye to our Mandy. He'll regret all the times he was Randy. To aiding a nonce, there's no good response, and Starmer's in need of a brandy. Thank you very much, Mr. Hooray. Quinn. And if you enjoyed Mr. Quinn's poetry, which you should, then please do go and subscribe to his channel. I don't know what it's called, Mr. Quinn or something. No, it's what he called Resident Poet Jolly Heretic. And also he has a book of Jolly Heretic poetry, which you will find available on the old Amazon. So go and subscribe there. Now, before we move on...
Before you move on, can I just ask, or can I commend Resident Poet? I was convinced the rhyme would involve the phrase handy.
Ah.
And he didn't. No, and I think he did that deliberately because he's a true artist.
Yeah, he thought that you would say handy, and from your expectations were not met, and from that humor
that made it better art.
That made it even better. That made it funnier. Your expectations were subversive. So now handy pandy. Yes, very 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 good, Jonathan Shadow. Brandy. Yes, there are many rhymes for Mandy. Yes, brandy, handy, Sandy. Candy.
There's a brilliant mockumentary on if you go on YouTube and look for Sandy Passage.
Oh,
it's not illegal. It's just a very, very funny about a 45-minute film. mock documentary, Sandy Passage.
Speaking of that, I was with my dad in a garage in about 1991, and there was a Pirelli calendar, and there was a naked picture of Naomi Campbell, but from the back, and she had sand all over her ass. But anyway, now if we move on to the
how do you know it was
chat,
Naomi Campbell? And
It was Naomi Campbell, definitely.
How do you know? If you couldn't say a face,
said it was.
It's just recognised her backside with sand on
it. I did, as a 10-year-old boy. Yeah.
This makes perfect sense, Ed. This is a really realistic story. Very believable.
There was only one famous black model at the time. It was definitely Naomi Campbell.
No, she probably had a bum substitute.
No, she couldn't do that.
She did.
Models don't have bum substitutes.
They do.
Although, for some reason, it was weird. You know, in what's that thing called? The Wicker Man. The Swedish girl that plays Willow in that, a Brit, Brit something or other. She had an arse substitute, but not a breast substitute. She was happy to have her breasts out, but not her arse. Whereas I was weird because I thought that for women, you know, the nipples are the holy of holies. That she'd get someone to. But no, she was Britt Ekland, that's her name. She had an arse substitute. Right, now, Stefan Vermark says autumn harvest. Thank you very much, sir. I don't know what that means. It's definitely winter here in northern Finland, but it may be autumn somewhere else in the world. I think it's unlikely. But thank you, sir.
Yeah, how would that work?
I don't.
Yes.
Well, it's out like Australia, wasn't it?
No, that'd be winter. No, that'd be Australia. Summer. The seasons have to be diametrically opposed because we don't live on a cube, do we? We live on a sphere.
Right. So if it was spring here, which it soon is, then it would be autumn in Australia.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be. It wouldn't be like halfway at the equator, would it?
It would be coming into autumn in Australia, perhaps, in parts of Australia.
Yeah, but you get my North point about being diametrically opposed because we're a sphere.
No.
Yes.
Northern Australia is going to have a different. It's going to be different from Southern Australia, isn't it? Because it's going to be colder.
Yeah, but it's not going to be a whole different season.
No, but it could
I understand
be
the concept of climate and temperature.
For example, autumn begins in Finland, in northern Finland.
Quick
right?
question,
autumn.
Ed. Do you know the difference in a Ed, do you know the difference in a square and a sphere?
No, because autumn begins in August in Finland, but it begins probably in September or even October in somewhere like Spain.
Yeah, no, but Ed, still, that's a question of a month's difference, not a whole bloody half a year.
It's not half a year, is it? Because we're moving towards the end of winter.
Yeah, but you don't have all these areas of the world with different autumns. You only have two main areas of the world.
Autumn is when the leaves go brown and fall off. And they're going to do that in different places according to the climate, aren't they?
Yeah, not each month. You won't have a different country of the month that's having autumn, you plonker.
Yeah, but yeah, you're defining autumn in a different way from me. I'm defining
No, I'm saying the seasons are defined by the fact we live on a sphere and the sun is at a certain angle. You absolute kimono-wearing tosspot.
You're failing to understand the fact that the differences in the climate of a country will relate to when autumn starts.
But that's... Yeah, I'm talking about when autumn itself, not when it starts.
Of course it's going to start differently according to what the climate is of the place.
No, not 6 months difference. There'll be slight marginal differences.
We're going to move back to this later, chaps. So in fact, we're going to have a vote on it. If I'm right, say one. If Paul's right,
they all simp for you. No, and don't. Most of them can't tie their own shoelaces. Of course they're going to vote for you.
No, Paul is right because Paul is smart. When we were in Liverpool, Paul gave me £20.
Yeah.
Yeah, for saying he was smart.
This is the time that he's cashing it in.
And he didn't give you £20. He gave you £20 as a joke on screen.
Yeah, but I never got it back, so I didn't give it him.
Not that smart then, are you?
No, Ed, I like Momos as a nice host.
No, that's a fake background like yours.
No, it's not fake. It looks real.
No, it's not. It's not fake. I mean,
I know.
Yeah, I like Momo's house, Ed.
Lipton, Momo's lives in an attic.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
He's only allowed out on a Monday to do this.
Oh, Ed, so Ed, let's talk about the abolitionist movement now.
Okay, steady on what you say about black people. Right.
All right. So I wrote a short piece today and I sent it to a right-wing publication, and the thesis is quite simple. Most people these days are not aware that modern and contemporary are two different words. Modernity is referring to an era, the modern era. Contemporary means now. A lot of people don't know the difference. But contemporary liberals are following the tradition of the radical abolitionists. The radical abolitionists were basically terrorists, like John Brown. They had no interest in the amelioration of slavery. They envisioned utopia, and if you did not support them as based on their own viewpoints, they hated you, were berated and othered. And modern contemporary liberals are like the radical abolitionists. Some of them were good, but many of them were not good, like William Wilberforce. William Wilberforce did not really care about poor people in England or the tax or how the tax system affected poor people or coal workers or anything like that.
I remember reading an article about him hounding to death some bookshop owner or something that sold what he regarded as a blasphemous book or something along these lines. And he absolutely hounded him into destruction and literal death. So no, he didn't actually care about poor people or black people.
Like the liberals of today, they cared more about the out group. So many of those white abolitionists were invested in the plight of slaves in the Caribbean, but they did not care about their fellow white people in the UK.
No, because they invest in the out-group. I mean, it's got this fascinating thing of this Spanish politician, surnamed something like Madero Gil, who used to be the Spanish Minister of Equalities, and her saying, I welcome replacement, she said. I welcome it. Please come and replace all our horrible right-wing, she used right-wing, racist, scrounging Spanish people. that's what she said, which is interesting because she's obviously talking about Spanish people that are on the dole.
Did she include the phrase fish nicking?
No, but that's a very good point. They do that. But
it's
anyway,
also why they don't do very well at the Olympics.
Look, we have a Spanish barmaid.
Momus, did you know that? All their able-bodied men and women are too busy stealing British fish.
And then they use the fish in the Olympics, and there's only a certain limited amount of sports that fish are good at, like swimming. But they're not very good at things like gymnastics or high jump or shot putt, anything like that. They can't throw things with their gills.
Yeah, because those trout, you know, when they have to go upstream. They jump in the air. They don't get very far, do they?
No, they don't get very far. There's flying fish. They're not very good. It's not good to have fish in the Olympics unless, as I said, it is swimming, in which case they're brilliant. But not so much good. Not very good at diving, though, because often they're not very good at that. But anyway, look, we get back to this serious topic. Yes, this is the case. And so you have the same attitude among the left in our own country with regard to the grooming gangs, don't you? Which is that they are, if we move back to that they are probably quite high in disgust, particularly if they're women. Women are high in disgust and in sanctity.
This is your personal experience.
Please, trying to be serious, just remember, keep on the topic, what would Richard say? So got to be serious here. So yes, Lipton. So and that's correct. They don't genuinely care, and that's why I think we don't talk about this either. Going back to the grooming gangs, I think they really hate them. They see the kinds like that woman. She talked about scroungers. I think the average English middle class woman just sees the kinds of girls that were involved in the grooming gangs as scum.
Mm-hmm.
They're the worst kind of white person. Mm. They probably feel the same looking at them as they would feel looking at a bucket of writhing maggots. And it's ugh. Whereas they can romanticize Pakistanis. Yes.
When are you going to run for the office of Prime Minister? I want to be a cabinet minister in the UK.
Keep on topic.
You've got more chance of getting on The View, Lipton.
Yeah, Lipton. We can do frivolity at the end, Lipton. Keep on topic, serious.
Okay.
I'll try this for another few minutes. Yes, this is the case. They don't they hate them. They're disgusted by them, and they just don't care. I think that it's absolutely awful. Did we look at the collapse of the Labour Party at all, or did we do that last week? I'm trying to remember.
I don't think we did.
No. So the suggestion is that Sir Keir Starmer, the baby harmer, the child harmer, might be on the ropes, and he knows it. And you know, going back to the old Epstein, then perhaps all kinds of malarkey may come out about him, and he'll have to go, and he'll go in May because of the election of reform. But that was the other issue that's come up in the last week. It's the Toryfication of reform. Are you voting reform, Paul?
I tend not to vote. I find it just encourages them all.
Yeah, but I don't see how you can be a radical party that's going to radically change things when you have in your party a number of the people that are directly responsible for...
No, I disagree with that, because I think they're only taking, with the occasional exception, most of the Tories that are defected are the ones that have openly criticised, like Suella Braverman. She criticised the policies that the most reform voters would be angry about. So there's a rump that I've always thought the Tory party for a good 10, 15 years have been the Lib Dems in disguise. David Cameron was not an old-fashioned Tory. Boris Johnson, and the way he just let the borders go completely haywire, he wasn't a traditional Tory. So the ones that have actually come across, they're going to need competent people. They're going to need people with experience. They're going to need people who can perform in front of a camera. So it'd be daft for them not to accept them.
Yeah, but why are they taking people like Zahavi and Nadine Dorries then? I mean, that's just pointless. Then neither have the brains nor nor the appeal with the public.
With occasional exception, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Zahavi was weird. I mean, he basically said, make me chancellor or I'll resign. And so I can just tick it off on the list and say I've been chancellor and I'm the first Iraqi chancellor. And then he almost immediately resigned anyway. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous what he did.
But I just think there's a guide to life. You're all right, Moments, because you don't actually shine your head. But Zahavi, he polishes. Yeah. There's a sheen on his head when he's on camera.
Remember the good old days, Paul, when bloke, you only got to go back to the 80s, when blokes that went bald put a lot of effort and a lot of Brill Cream into combing it over. And the parting would be sort of there somewhere. And I had a teacher at school, Mr. Sutton, and sometimes for various reasons we'd have to line up in the playground, like PE or whatever, right? And it would come up in the wind and it would blow like a...
We had a psycho teacher at school, and in our school, because it was a proper school, Ed, used to get strapped, corporal punishment. And he'd strap you so hard, his comb over would go to the side, so everyone would laugh. And then he'd get someone else out the class and strap them. It was just like a never-ending strapping because people laughed at him.
On and on forever.
until he got tired.
Until he was so exhausted. At that point, his hair would just flop down. No, that was the best one though, Mr. Sutton. It was great. It was brilliant. And then I don't know what point it must have been in the mid 90s. Suddenly, it became fashionable if you were bald to keep your hair really short. But it's never, and it's only that baldness where, it's bald on top sort of thing. You still get people, if they go bald out the sides, like Dracula.
Yeah.
Is it because you've got too much testosterone?
Probably, yeah.
I don't mean to be personal, but have you got a massively hairy chest?
Not that much, actually. Not that much.
All right.
Have you got mid-pelagial hair? Have you got hair on your fingers, Momus?
Yeah, I do, actually, yeah. Yeah, I have hair where I don't want it, and I don't have hair where I don't want it.
That's a testosterone marker, to have hair on mid-pelagial hair.
Yeah.
That'd be a great name for an 80s romantic pop band.
We found that when you controlled for average intelligence of a country, the extent of mid-pelagial hair predicted per capita Nobel Science Prizes.
Yes, I read that study.
Because it's high testosterone. The son published it as No Balls, No Nobel.
Mid-pelagial hair.
Yeah, so hair on the you know, it's the second half, or whatever you want to call it, of your fingers, so below your knuckle. That's your above your knuckle, sorry. That's your mid-pelagius. And so if you have hair, well, you probably wouldn't at your age. If you have hair on there when you're in, you know, your 20s or whatever, then it would it's an indicator of testosterone. And we've got national level data on the extent of that.
And androgen.
And it's an androgen marker, yeah. So
I'm an expert on Ed Dutton's work. I'm an expert.
Yeah. I'm more of an
Someone
expert.
Someone has to be.
I'm more of an expert because it's my work.
Not necessarily, Ed. I don't think you read your own work. Lipton actually reads your work.
Yes.
I don't even write it. There's a factory mill in Pakistan that does that. Lipton knows a great deal about my work.
Because you mentioned I studied history, so I'm familiar of the relationship between Pakistan and India. They were once the same people. I'm saying this to point out that in America and some part of the UK, it is widely believed that Indians are really smart. But recently I was reading a study published by this famous economist, educational psychologist, on academic performance in Vietnam, Ethiopia, India, and Peru. And it just reinforced the point that India is a low human capital country with some smart people.
Steady on Lipton, good. Low human capital, you can use that phrase.
Yeah, low human capital.
I mean, the thing is that, as I've explained to Lipton before, with India, is it's very difficult to compare it to, like, Vietnam, because the genetic diversity is so enormous.
Yeah, so
it's huge. There can be more genetic diversity within one Indian village than there is within Iceland, because of the caste system operating over thousands of years. And so you end up with this huge cannibalization. So
different ethnic systems as well. Like, there's so many different ethnicities within them.
Yeah, like thousands.
Yeah.
Is it caste, Ed, or caste?
It's caste. It's a caste system. You've got loads of different ethnicities, firstly. Secondly, you've got the caste
system. Only the upper class caste. Say it that way.
It's not the caste system. It's not like a casket of beer. And beer, by the way, is very expensive in India. Alcohol is heavily taxed. And you can only get it from like one state shop. So it's like Scandinavia in that sense. But so you've got the caste system, and then you've got different ethnicities, and then you've got the north-south divide. The south is much richer than the north. And
twas then, always thus.
Yeah, exactly. That's not actually true, because in a lot of countries, it's the north that's poor, like Spain. So it can't really compare. It's not like comparing it to Jamaica, Lipton. I mean, Jamaica has a human capital of... And they're all pretty similar. They're all Jamaicans, whereas India, they're all from. You've got ethnic groups. You've got unscheduled castes. You've got tribes that aren't even Hindu.
What's an unscheduled caste? Are they the ones that don't turn up on time?
The outcasts, the ones that aren't in the caste.
Oh right, right, right.
The Haridans.
Just like they're not perpetually late.
No. And then you've got the tribes. So like the Kurgi, for example, in southern India, then they're not recognised as Hindu, and they eat beef and stuff. So there's all kinds of diversity in India that nobody knows about. There's all kinds of diversity in Islam that nobody knows about. They just go, "Oh, Muslims, they're bad." And there's all kinds of diversity. There's all kinds of diversity in Liverpool. Everyone goes, "Oh, Liverpudlians are bad." No, there's different kinds of Liverpudlian. There's Liverpudlians from
some steal hubcaps, some steal other things. There's huge diversity.
there's West Derby. There's Knotty Ash. There's Walton.
There's Tocky. There's Crocky.
There's all kinds of different Liverpudlians. So, you know, you can't check your bigotry there. But anyway, Lipton, you were saying about the William Wilberforce being a bastard.
Yeah, so we are William.
I think you find it's pronounced bastard.
Dr. Foote, his name was Dr. Jess Foote. So he wrote a book defending the planters, and in that book, he argues that William Wilberforce expended his energies lobbying for slaves in the West Indies when white working class people were suffering in England. He didn't care about their plight or how those workers were treated, but he spent quite a bit of time talking about slaves in the Caribbean, even when slavery was being ameliorated.
Exactly. And think how terrible life was in the Industrial Revolution for white people in places like Liverpool and Manchester. There, rickets.
Ed, sorry to interrupt, Ed. Have you seen in the comments one of your followers has basically had a fit?
Has he? What's he done?
Look, America first, Jesus is
Jesus.
So hang on. So we were trolled a few weeks ago because that Hope Not Hate chat was a nonce.
No, I just think that's one of your random followers, Ed, and he's basically he's channeling what goes on your thought process.
No, because what I'm thinking about is this new brilliant data set that I've got hold of where I can test whether there
What you think you're thinking of, but your actual brain waves show that that's what you're actually thinking, just loads of flags.
Oh, no, what Jesus. I'm actually thinking is Momus has quite a large head and therefore is he autistic? That was literally just what I thought.
Are you could be smart? Momus, are you short-sighted?
Yeah.
He's smart. I knew it. Momus is smart. He's short-sighted.
He's smart. He's short-sighted and he's got mid-pelagial hair. So that's genius material. That's intelligence plus testosterone. That's from where original ideas come.
From the middle of your knuckles.
Kind of.
My ideas come from there.
Yeah. Moses' hairy knuckles give him all his originality.
He's like Nietzsche, but he philosophizes with a fist rather than a hammer.
So most of us have like hair right here on this side of our finger?
No, East Asian people don't. A lot of white people don't.
So what are you saying? I have genius level here then.
No, but you've got to control for race. So you get some races that are hairier than others because they have Neanderthal admixture, or I don't know quite why it is that South Asians and Arabs are quite hairy. I don't know what the evolutionary reason is for that. But when you control for that, when you control for like ethnic hairiness, like the hairy I knew are very hairy. But when you control for that, it's a mark. Control for intelligence that within race, that it's a marker of testosterone. So there's other reasons for it, but there's other reasons. Baldness, for example, is a marker of testosterone. There's other reasons for it, but it is partly a matter of testosterone. All kinds of things like that. So it doesn't mean that inherently, just because you could have a normal amount of finger hair for a man that's like 90% black or whatever, 80% black or whatever you are. So that's why.
You could get hair transplants on your knuckles just to make yourself look brighter.
Yeah.
That would be the new fad.
It would make you look more fast, like it's strategic.
Those Halloween fake hands.
I think so. I need some investment to open some clinic in Turkey.
Well, sort of fake it to make it. I'm not a genius, but if I get intelligent, but I'm not a genius. If I get transplanted hair onto my fingers and my hair shave my hair off, then hopefully the more I do that, I will be. Yeah, that's kind of getting it the wrong way round, isn't it? That's the kind of that's the kind of logic that I'm just. Yeah, that a genius wouldn't think with. I like the idea of that. Men with beards are successful. I'm going to grow a beard rather than the qualities that cause you to already have a beard. I don't know. Do hairy taints count, says Shibus Ben? No, it's taint length. So again, if you wanted to indicate that you were high testosterone, you would have your taint stretched so that you had a long taint.
Isn't that just giving birth?
Well, if that were the case, that's interesting. Then women would be higher in genius when giving birth.
Just
because they'd have higher testosterone, if you're correct, wouldn't they? Because their taints would stretch.
You're going to whisper to me, Lipton.
I have something to say to you, Paul. Paul. Ed, close your... cover your ears, Ed. You can't hear this one.
Okay.
Please do. So, Paul, guess what? There are racial differences in being short-sighted.
That's very interesting, Lipton. Are they in the direction that I would expect?
Yes, exactly.
Jews have a high rate of short-sightedness.
Is that because the brain is bigger and the eye is part of the brain? And the
I think that's what Edward Miller said. Edward Miller, he has a theory to explain it.
Yes.
Yeah, it was published. I don't remember the exact idea, but he was saying that it's related to the brain. So it means that their brain is more connected, it functions more effectively, but just to do with the brain.
If you're short-sighted, doesn't that mean your eyes are more convex?
It's more related to your earlier point about the brain. That's what Edward Miller said. I didn't read all of his
paper. I mean that the brain, the eye, right, is part of the brain, isn't it?
Which
is why they say the eye is the window to the soul, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so if you've got this big brain because you're so clever, then presumably your eyes are going to bulge out of your head and you're going to be short-sighted because you're going to have convex eyes.
Yes, exactly. That's what Ed Miller said.
Yeah.
Would it be quicker just to get a perineal elongation rather than read a load of books? I could have been wasting my time for the past 40 years.
I'm thinking how smart frogs are.
I think the French are very smart, Momus. Racist.
But there are other things that can make you have bulging eyes, though. Like, for example, thyroid problems. Well,
someone's messed with your perineum.
I don't think that it works quite like that. But you just elongate the perineum, and thus the brain gets larger, and thus you become short-sighted.
Now I'm exploring this with you because we have to explore this idea. We have to write a novel called Pubic Mice Redux.
Yeah.
We have to do a lot of these things.
I've also got this idea of writing a series of Sophie Kinsella, that novelist that died recently. Sophie Kinsella. And I had the idea of making an Indian version of that, like an Indian chick lit author. I don't think there is one. So there's a gap in the market. And she'd be called Sangeeta Basu.
Scrub Your Nons, it could be called, the first novel.
Exactly, yeah. Me and a friend came up with various pun-related titles. Every single book will be some kind of pun on Indian food. Every single novel title will be a pun, without exception, on Indian food. Like Death at Hainan, or whatever. There'll be something like that. You know, the Jalfrezi of delights, or whatever. Right,
Bargee on the Nile.
Exactly. Anything, any pun, every single book title will be a pun on Indian food. And it'll be about a young single sort of that girl out of Sex and the City, like that. Except she's from, you know, she's a writer and shit. And she's from Calcutta. That's why she's called Basu. She's Bengali.
It could be Sex in the Sooty. And it'd be a woman being burnt alive, and she has one last go.
Having sex.
Yeah. Sex in the Sooty. I want to write that.
Sex in the Sooty. People would definitely buy that. Sex in the Sooty. I'll write that down. So we had this idea, me and a friend, that we would write the novels, obviously, and then we would publish them. It had to be originally published in India, I suppose. But by Sangeeta Basu. She could be like, we could use AI. She could be like Amelia. She would be this fake, very hot Indian. And she'd be a bit conservative. So she'd wear a sari, but in like a sexy way. So that thing they wear where they put it on their neck, that backwards scarf, that would be like low down. Like that. And she'd have a little, you know, but she'd be a bit modern. So she'd do that, but she'd have like shortish hair and whatever. But she'd probably have a cigarette. And we had this, I think, as long as I can get the novels written, maybe AI can write the novels for me. I think Sangeeta Basu is the way forward. There is no Indian chick lit writer. It doesn't exist as a thing. And there's all these modern Indian girls that are all going to McDonald's in New Delhi and eating vegetarian hamburgers because that's the cool place to hang out in New Delhi. And yeah.
Was Shakespeare black?
No, I don't think so.
According to this new writer, Shakespeare was a black woman and a Jewish black woman.
A Jewish black woman? So an Ethiopian Jew?
I don't know.
Of course it
was. Well, that's the only way she could be black and be a Jew.
She was a Jewish black woman.
I don't know. I mean, there was a guy at Aberdeen University just before I went there that in the Celtic department that published some paper arguing that some medieval manuscript that was obviously written by a medieval monk in Welsh was written by a woman. That was the argument of his paper, and he came up with these very unlikely arguments as to why it would be written by a woman. But it obviously wasn't written by a woman, because all of these medieval manuscripts that were written in Welsh were written by monks. So, and it's notoriously difficult for a woman to become a monk. So he was wrong. He was just talking.
Maybe that manuscript didn't make that much sense. That's why he thought so.
Perhaps that's true. Yes, it was very emotional. He thought exactly. It was all about kittens and desire for babies. And he thought this is weird. It's so different from the other manuscripts. It must have been written by a woman, and it was. And it was peer reviewed and it was published. But I don't know. Did you read about it, Lipton? Because I just thought to myself, this is so absurd. I'm
not even gonna... No, I didn't. I didn't.
Well, then I think they recently found a manuscript called Baby Mama.
That's really funny. This is so funny.
Ed doesn't Korma think so, Lipton.
No, I'm just trying to think of other puns for Sangeeta Basu, like Korma Dance With Me. any viewers that can think of any Indian food puns for romance novels?
Does it have to be food?
Well, no. Sati wasn't food, so no, I suppose not necessarily. No.
So what, like, you'll be sorry or sorry.
Oh, you'll be sorry. Oh, that's good. That's a good one.
I was trying to get something to rhyme with Tendulkar, but I failed.
Someone wrote Pilau Dog.
That's a good one. Pilau Talk. No, that's a good one. That's good. Although, as I understand it, that in India, pilau rice is considered very low status. It's like the old rice that's going off, and so to cover up that fact, they pilau it, and then you eat it. I remember having an argument in a Pakistani restaurant, and it was Pakistani, in Durham once over this. And I said I would like a madras or something with pilau rice. I said, no, you don't want pilau rice with it. No. You should have plain rice with it, or a naan. And I said, but I want pilau rice. No, it's not.
They mix sweet rice with pilau rice as well. Yeah, but regions he did differently. Like, you know,
he was. This particular restaurant, I think, was called Khyber Pass.
So they were from like the Pakhtunkhwan area, the north area. So they don't really like pilau rice, anyways. They don't eat that.
So Khyber Passage would be a definite title.
Yeah, that's too similar to Khyber Pass, though, isn't it? So
it would just be a bit ruder.
No, we're not going for rude. This is. I'm thinking women.
Yeah, but I'm now diversifying as your publication marketing expert. you need a pervy line as well. It's not all going to be about food
for the erotica lines.
Yeah,
I suppose we could do a different Indian author. That's
a picture of you, Ed, in a sari gang,
like an Indian equivalent of Viz. That's aimed at lads. That's aimed at Indian lads. Between the ages of about 16 and 35, Indian lads mag, an Indian lads mag, which we would call Khyber Passage,
50 or, Shades of Brown, something.
Or no, what was the Sooty? What was the Sooty one that I liked? Sex and the Sooty. Yeah,
Sex and the Sooty.
That would be the name of this magazine, and it would be aimed. It would be Indian lads mag.
The tagline could be guaranteed to get you hot.
Korma Sutra.
Korma Sutra is a good one. Sexy. That is a good one. The thing is, though, korma is a very mild curry, the kind of curry that a girl would have. It's kind of a low status curry in the world of curry.
Yeah, but chiclet. I thought it was a chiclet imprint. Yeah,
we've moved on from Sangeeta Basu to her male equivalent. We haven't named yet. Let's call him Sanjay Patel. Shagaloo. That's very good. Goes cheeseburger 6320. Shagaloo. That's excellent. That's absolutely excellent. Shagaloo. That's
how many people are watching?
That's the best one yet. 1,650.
How many?
1,650. Is that okay? Is that okay? Papa Don preach, says Tommy. That's a very good one. We've moved off the topic slightly. So for the last
slightly 6 minutes, I'm pretty sure Epstein liked curries as well. So still on topic.
He doesn't mention it, does he? And I'm not aware that there are any Hindu or Muslim girls that have come forward and said that I've been groomed by Jeffrey Epstein. It's all white folk, as I understand. Russian, as I understand it. But yes, getting back to it, to bookend this, I think this should be the biggest story since the Pakistani grooming gangs, which itself wasn't a big enough story.
Yeah, like, and that's why it won't be a big story.
Exactly.
Well.
There's too many rich, important people involved for this to be a big story. In the case of the grooming gangs, it undermines essentially the religion of society. So that's no good. And in the case of this, it just undermines the notion we should trust our leaders, and no sensible leader would want to undermine that notion completely. So we just have this nonsense of them kind of blaming Prince Andrew and going on about Prince Andrew. Well, it's perfectly possible that he hasn't done that much wrong. And it's just some borderline crazy woman that's accusing him. There's this fantasist.
Even if he has done a lot wrong and stuff, it's pretty clear that he isn't the mastermind of anything. Like, he has no influence. So, you know.
He evidently has very low intelligence.
Yeah.
And I think that's the cruel thing about getting a guy who doesn't have very high IQ, clearly, and putting him in a position of in the public spotlight and so forth all his life.
I don't think you're being unfair, because Emily Maitlis proved what an absolute Einstein level of genius she was for outwitting him in that interview. Please don't ruin my whole world perception.
No, I'm afraid Emily Maitlis... Oh, what is it, Lipton?
Because I wanted to say something to Paul. Paul, because we're talking about Jeffrey Epstein, Jamaica's...
Use the back of your hand, Lipton. Don't let Ed hear.
Jamaica's age of consent is 16. It used to be lower than 16. So years ago, like in the 1940s, years ago, when it was lower than 16, my great-granddad had a relationship with a girl who could have sex with him.
How old was this girl, Lipton?
About 15 years.
Well, J. Philippe Rushton had sex with a girl that was 13.
No, really? Where did you find that? I didn't know.
Yeah, because at that time, the age of that you could get married in whatever state of Canada this was, Western Ontario, was 14. And they had to wait till she turned 14 to get married. And at the time, she was heavily pregnant. And there are photos to prove it.
How old was J. Philippe Rushton?
J. Philippe Rushton, the guy that wrote Race
Evolution. Yeah, no, how old was he? When he slept with her.
Oh, he would have been like 21.
Okay, my great granddad was what? Like, I won 29.
And he was shagging at 15.
No, she was older than 14, but not 16.
She was 15. Yeah. okay. Well,
What is the Ed? What is the sort of like the psychology behind? Like, why do men, certain men, are attracted to such young... Is it like such young girls? Is it a matter of control, that they have more control over them, you know, that they would... What is it about?
Yeah, yes, Ed. Why?
Why? Why do you do it, Ed?
Well, let's ask Paul. Paul, why these girls in your basement...
I was in there first, Ed. Come on.
I know you are. What I'm supposed to say to you is, oh, because they're nonsense. And that is true, I suppose. But what makes more sense, I think, probably is, that you can be in an unstable ecology where everyone's shagging around, you can be absolutely sure these people are virgins, and therefore you're controlling them, and therefore it's definitely your children.
Yeah. And they're physically weak. You can control them to do whatever you want.
They're physically, they're other things as well. I mean, it's not just. I'm not just saying this like my view. That David Buss has talked to me about this. So yeah, they're physically weak. You can control them. Fine. They are definitely going to be virgins, and so there's no possibility of you essentially being cuckolded by being involved with these people because they've shagged someone else and they're pregnant. And also, very importantly, if they're that young, you it's as though you see the potential in them and they don't know their mate value. So as far, they don't understand their mate value. As far as women are evolved to be sexually attracted to older men because older age is associated in prehistory and even now to some extent with resources and so forth. That's why women go through puberty earlier so they can cop up with older men. And then, of course, if they're older, then they don't know their mate value. And by the time they realise their mate value, and they're, you know, moving towards 23, which is the sex with the time, so the optimum that you want a girl at about 23, in terms of fertility, then you've got them and you control them. So it would make sense that there'll be variation in the population with regard to various traits that you find attractive. Mm. And some people would trade everything for youth.
Is there some sort of data as well to show like the perpetrators of these men? The majority of these people, are they like themselves not good looking or don't have like, you know, the qualities that a woman would want and stuff? And that's
I don't think we've got data on them not being good looking, but we've got data on how the more unstable the ecology is, then the bigger these age gaps are. That's the first thing. And secondly, that the bigger the age gaps are, then the more kind of fast life strategic the men and women are, so that the more that they're trading other qualities for just youth and beauty and that sort of thing. So you've got for dinner, Paul. I have.
My takeaway has arrived, and also I'd quite like to leave so that I don't look to be associated with this conversation.
it's close to home, Paul, isn't it?
It is difficult to look at this in a logical way. Well, we've got to wrap up anyway. So I'd like to thank Momus for coming on. So remember to subscribe to World of Momus.
Thank you,
Momus. And thank you, Paul. And we will see you all soon, chaps. And goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. More.